So it's 6 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Good evening. This is a special session of the Parks and Rec Advisory Board starting at 6 p.m. If you wish to address the board on any item on this agenda, please complete a blue card. There's only one. So anyway, once completed, it'll be handed in and we'll have you in, but yours is not on the agenda. So roll call. Ms. Wilson, may I have the roll call, please?
Yes. Vice Chair Temple?
Here.
Board Member Horvath is absent and excused. Board Member Landau?
Here.
Board Member Muthart?
Here.
Board Member Saleta is absent and excused. Board Member Varys? She is here.
Here.
Via phone, thank you. And Chair Wood?
Here. So up next is the department report, Mr. Jankowski. Welcome to the group.
Thank you very much, Chair Wood. Good evening, members of the board and member of the public. I've been the interim Parks and Recreation Director since Christy left the organization on the 30th of June. So I've been in the position here for almost a month, serving in an interim role. I think this is the first time I'm meeting some of you tonight. So just to give you guys a little bit of knowledge as to who I am, I've been with the organization as Christy's deputy director for the Parks and Recreation Department for, it'll be 5 years in September. So I've been around for a little while. Typically, I've been the liaison to the HPC. Christy was here with you all as the PRAB group, but just wanted to introduce myself to all of you, let you know that I'm available if the need arises, if you guys have any questions or anything like that. I do have a good amount of information to share with you all. It has been a little while since you had a meeting. And in addition to that, it's summertime, and summertime is Parks and Recreation time. So we've got a lot going on. I'll give an update with regards to the Naranja Park project right now. About 3 weeks ago, we installed stolons on the new ball fields, fields 5 and 6, at the Naranja Park site. The stolon application was very successful, and the grow-in has been fantastic. Our grass is actually a week ahead of expectations. They have had a number of broadcast fertilizers applied to them, and we're expecting to be able to mow those fields for the first time here in about 2 weeks. Additionally, we've met on site to create trail access routes from the neighborhoods to the east and west of the park. Those designs were finalized last week, and they'll include utilization of existing trails and improvements to additional areas that will lead everybody into the center of the park. So people in those neighborhoods can walk a trail to get into Naranja Park, something that's actually an established trail. Work on the splash pad and the skate bike park area is permitted to begin on August 4th, so we expect construction to begin not too terribly far after, and construction of pickleball courts associated to the Naranja Park project will begin within the next 2 months. So in addition to those items, we held a ribbon cutting on July 18th at Steam Pump Ranch to celebrate the completion of the barbecue and bunkhouse projects on the property. This work began in March, and it was completed on schedule as well as on budget. Poster Myrto McDonald was the architect, and the Chase Building team was the JOC contractor on the project. We had about 35 people attend the event to brave the hot and humid temperatures. It was a nice turnout for that morning. In addition to that, we also completed an ADA ramp and parking improvements project at the Push Ridge property. This project provided improved ADA access to the entryway, to the second floor tennis shop, as well as then a pathway to the golf pro shop and patio, which winds its way down. Previously, there was just the roadway down to get access to that. So now there is a ramp with established handrail there. The new parking lot improvements include new larger handicap spaces as well. The start of August, like I mentioned, is pretty much the end of summer, so that ends our summer programming season throughout the Parks and Recreation Department. This year was our biggest summer to date. It included 3 individual all-day camps produced by our Parks and Recreation Department, as well as 11 camps that were contracted. The Department also hosted an incredibly successful July 4th event at JDK Park with over 5,000 members of the community attending the celebration and a fantastic fireworks display to cap it all off. As we move into the month of August, the Oro Valley Aquatic Center will begin its fall schedule. This fall, the Aquatic Center offers long course in addition to short course on a more regular basis, and it also welcomes a number of the local area swim teams. There are three different high schools who use the Oro Valley Aquatic Center as their home base for their swim teams. And lastly, but certainly not least, with Christie's departure at the end of June, just before that, we had Tom Ellis, who is our park superintendent, who also left the organization in the middle part of June. I'm very happy to announce that last week we offered the position to our parks supervisor, who went through the interview process, and he has been promoted. So Jared Placentia is our new parks superintendent, effective on Monday. We will be posting his previous position as parks supervisor in the coming days. Mr. Chair, that is my report.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have the council liaison comments. Ms. Jones-Ivy, you are on.
Thank you very much, and I want to welcome Matt to the interim position. Thank you very much for taking it.
My pleasure.
As far as council activities, our last council meeting last month, the mayor did a proclamation for drowning impact awareness because, as you know, summer, and particularly the summers that we've had, this year has been really very hot, and we realize that there's going to be an significant increase in water activities. So with saying that, we're hoping that water safety has been on the forefront of everyone's mind. The other item that we got accomplished was if you're familiar with the property located at the northwest corner of Naranja and La Cañada Drive, we did approve a conditional use permit for a drive-through. They came back to us for us to get a reconsideration of a 2006 grading situation, which we approved. They also brought the conceptual site and landscape plans along with the conceptual architecture, and we also approved that. Council is pretty much inactive during the month of August. We have no council meetings at all, but we'll be back at it next September, and I'll be ready and give you my next update at your next meeting in September. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I have to read this. I will now open call to audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. The commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. So I have a blue card, and Anna. Yeah, just Anna.
Thank you. Appreciate this opportunity. My name is Anna Tanase. I've been living and working in Oro Valley for about 11 years. My kids go to school here. My topic today is community gardens. So I'm a gardener, I'm a parent, I'm a physician, and I see a lot of benefits in having this available to the public in terms of, you know, education for kids, activities for elders, for young people, learning about sustainability. So all this, you know, COVID period, this was a perfect activity that everybody could have engaged. I see it as a mental health activity in terms of, you know, like music therapy, there's gardening therapy. I see it as a way to engage with like local communities, like Native Americans, having their own way of you know, doing gardenings and us learning from them. There are about 26 community gardens in Tucson and none in Oro Valley yet. I have visited some. I have talked to the board of directors. And, you know, there's a list of, you know, what you need to get that started. It could be done on public land, in a church, in a school, in a private land. I thought that, you know, public land would be more accessible to everybody that lives in Oro Valley. There are other options too, but I thought that's the best way to start. I know that it involves, you know, funding and it involves works. I did review the master plan of 2021, where all like the community was consulted and all that they wish to accomplish in the future. And this was one of the higher priorities. And there's none that, you know, satisfies these needs. There's other topics that are in the top priority, but there are already, you know, some amenities around that. But this so far, there is none. There's still a lot of like open space in Oro Valley, and there's a lot of you know, construction too. But I think that doesn't take that much land to, you know, accomplish it, and it can benefit, you know, different areas of the community, and it would be a benefit for everyone.
Thank you.
Perfect. 2 minutes 24.
Oh, good job. So, Mr. Jankowski, can you put that on your list of things to think about? And Leni, in the general plan 2026, right? Yep. So maybe put a note in for that, too. Thank you. Special session agenda. Okay, item number one is to review and approval of the February 21, 2023 regular session and the May 9, 2023 special session meeting minutes. So I move to approve the February 21 and the May 9 meeting minutes. May I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion? Anybody see anything that didn't look quite right? Hearing none, can...
I am going to make a change. Thank you, Matt, for bringing it to my attention. There was a misspelling of a guy's name on the blue card. I have made note of that, and we will make that change.
Great.
Thank you.
He sends me a lot of emails.
I knew you knew him. That's why I said that. Yeah, perfect.
So, anything else? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Special session agenda item number two, presentation and discussion regarding potential town code amendments to private recreation area amenity in lieu fee opportunities and other related requirements for residential subdivisions, multifamily projects, and mixed-use developments. Ms. Sims, please introduce yourself, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair Wood. Good evening. My name is Melini Sims, and I'm a principal planner with the Town of Oro Valley. And I'm here tonight to discuss and provide some updates on proposed changes to requirements for private rec areas. Just give me one moment. And I'm just going to close that. So, if approved, this proposed code amendment will only affect new residential subdivisions, multifamily, or mixed-use developments. It does not apply to public parks. However, we did want to come back to the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board to discuss some of the feedback you gave us last year, as well as provide some updates prior to the code amendment being considered by the Commission and Town Council. So the proposed changes, they really stem from a need that was identified with the Parks and Rec Needs Assessment done in 2020 with the master plan. The Needs Assessment did a community-wide survey, and through that survey, some of the results where there was a need for larger neighborhood parks. In fact, outside of open space and trails, neighborhood parks were the third highest priority identified. From that, the town council, through their strategic leadership plan, further prioritized this need by including objectives in their last strategic leadership plan to look at codes and make recommendations to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks and meaningful amenities. So significant research was conducted to identify some of the best practices to meet those objectives and the need identified in the Parks and Rec plan. Staff inventoried private rec areas as well as the size and amenity requirements, not only in Oro Valley, but also in surrounding jurisdictions, as you can see on the list. We also worked with the Parks and Recreation Department and PROS Consulting, who did the Parks and Rec master plan, to try to identify best practices for meeting the SLP objectives. This research was presented to the advisory board back in August, so almost a year ago. It was also presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission as well as Town Council to get more guidance on the research that we provided. In response to addressing some of the questions and concerns from these three bodies, we also surveyed HOA board members to get a further understanding about the use of amenities, the value of smaller park areas, as well as some of the maintenance costs that they deal with their existing parks. So from the, as you can see on the map on the screen, that is a map of all the private rec areas and facilities in the town. And what we were what we got was 18 responses on the survey representing 24 private rec areas. Now, this does include the Vistoso Community Association, which has 16 of those 24 private rec areas. So I do want to say that the survey definitely provides valuable insight, but because of the low response rate, it shouldn't be solely used for decision making. Staff has also been in continuous conversations with some stakeholders, such as the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association and the Metropolitan Pima Association, as well as multifamily housing developers as well. So tonight I'm going to discuss four components that we've developed to meet those the guidance in the strategic leadership plan. So to prioritize larger neighborhood parks, we're really looking to consolidate private rec areas, increase the size or even establish the size required for a rec area, prioritize higher value rec areas, and then for the amenities, looking to make sure that there is a variety of both passive and active amenities for all ages and abilities in every park. Now I'm going to go through these in detail, and again, I'm going to go through some of the research we did last time because it's been a year, but I really want to focus, too, on the feedback and updates we provided. All right, so the first component is to consolidate private rec areas. Mainly, this aims to create adequately sized rec areas that can be a central focal point for residential projects and have enough space for both passive and active recreation. What we found is in the code currently, there's no mechanism to consolidate private rec areas, and this can result in smaller, scattered parks within a residential project. So what's shown on the screen is an example of when this can occur, and this is the Villages at Silverhawk subdivision, which is actually right at the end of Naranja. And there are four different rec areas for this subdivision, which are notated with a star. So with the board, commissions, and council, there was agreement that larger consolidated rec areas are better. However, there was also a need to allow flexibility to allow further distribution when warranted. So for instance, when you have a bigger subdivision, there may be a need to allow more distribution of rec areas. So the proposed code would require that the private rec areas not be distributed in more than two spaces. It also would require that the rec areas be within a half mile from the residence it intends to serve and must be at least 60 foot wide at any given point. And again, from that feedback, we also, with the survey, identified that almost half of the respondents agreed that larger rec areas that are centrally located are beneficial. Location, visibility, and accessibility of rec areas were a primary determinant on if they were going to going to be used by residents. So as new information to address the need for more flexibility when warranted, is the proposed code language gives town council the authority to approve further distribution, specifically to meet that half mile range from residents as you get with these larger subdivisions, but also if there's topography constraints or if because they're able to provide a more variety of amenities by offering more spaces. With that 60 foot wide at any given point, we did some research where we looked at our inventory of parks, and that seemed to be the narrowest you can get where you can really have enough space to have enough amenities. But we also want flexibility with that as well. So the code has an allowance to town council to even allow narrower spaces if the rec area is a trail or linear park, or if there's topography constraints, again, that warrant a special circumstance. So in addition to consolidating private rec areas within a single residential project, the proposed code also will require adjacent subdivisions to construct larger shared recreation areas. So this was a concern from all three bodies about really the mechanics and feasibility of requiring different developers and possibly different HOAs to share a rec area. So I just want to clarify, and the code also makes this a little bit more, or clearly states that this would only apply to very limited circumstances where a rezoning or a master development plan includes more than one subdivision. So the example on the screen, this is Capella, which is the area off west of LaToya and between Lambert and just north of Naranja. So this was actually both a rezoning and a master development plan. So the code currently requires a master development plan for larger tracts of area like this. So when they come in to develop, they do have to plan for the entire area to make sure it's a cohesive and with vehicle and pedestrian connectivity, a cohesive space. And in this case, for instance, there are multiple subdivisions that can go in here that may or may not be developed by different builders. However, the rec areas, which are shown with a star, those were planned very early in the process. So during that rezoning process, during the master planning process, they decided where the rec areas would be and they will be shared. Typically, there is one master HOA for these areas, but not always. However, the construction and maintenance of the rec areas are established very early on through the rezoning and master development process. And with that stated, as you may know, there's very limited amounts of large pieces of land left in the town waiting to be developed. So this would also most likely apply for future annexations. Okay, the second component, looking at private rec area size, is to increase or establish the size of rec areas to make sure that they are usable and there's enough space for amenities. From our research of all those other jurisdictions, we found that Oro Valley's private rec requirement for subdivisions is a little bit lower than some other jurisdictions. And the table on the screen kind of shows this research that we did. Also, the rec area requirement for multifamily or mixed-use developments isn't clear. So those developments, or those zoning districts, I should say, they have an open space requirement. And within the open space, there may be rec facilities. So there's not a clear requirement for rec sizes. So the road code will increase the rec area requirement for subdivisions from 512, which is what it currently is, to 900 square feet per unit. It will also require a portion of that open space already required in multifamily and mixed-use developments to be used for rec area. So again, the Parks and Rec assessment identified this need for larger parks or larger private parks. And there was concern about the legalities of increasing the recreation area size. So just for context, applying stricter zoning requirements to private property that already has existing rights can lead to what's called a taking and can put the town at risk for being sued. So that was kind of the concern there. And
can you repeat that?
So when the town amends the code, if we apply stricter requirements than what a property owner already is allowed within their rights, that can lead to what's called a taking. So if they can show that our stricter requirements reduce the market value of their property, then they can sue us. I'm not sure if they'll win, but it puts us at a position where we could be sued by the private property owner. There's also, from all three bodies, there was guidance to make sure that we keep the open space requirements currently required for multifamily and mixed-use developments. And there is also guidance that the rec space for apartments be similar to our single-family subdivisions on a per-unit basis, because right now it's not correlated to density at all. It's a percentage of land area. So what's proposed and what's kind of shown in the table is, first, we would only apply this increase, the 512 to 900, for rezoning applications. And the reason being is when a private property owner asks to rezone their property, they're asking for new rights. So therefore, we are in compliance with the law to say, okay, now you have to meet this new standard. As also you can as shown on the table, we are not changing the open space requirement for any of the multifamily or mixed-use zoning districts. What we're aiming to do, though, is require that a portion of that open space has to be usable rec area. So it has to have amenities, especially. And then for our apartments, what we're looking at is requiring 400 square feet per unit. And so this is more rec space than we're currently getting in our existing apartments, and it's also a little bit more than what other jurisdictions require. All right, and the third and last item with regard to larger park sizes is prioritizing higher value rec areas to eliminate our extreme, our very, very small parks. They just have little space for amenities. And as proposed, we want to provide an equitable process for all smaller residential projects. So right now in code, instead of constructing a required rec area with amenities, a developer can ask for a portion or all of the rec area to be satisfied by a fee. Now this fee is based on the amount it would cost to install the rec area, so that even includes the amenities and the land value, and it has to be approved by town council. They also have to show, there's a criteria, they have to show that this alternative is still beneficial to residents, and they have to show that they are within proximity to a public park facility. So these don't have to happen often. The most recent one I can think of was about 3 years ago for it was a residential subdivision off Lambert and Shorecliffe, and they are within walking distance of Riverfront Park, and they were very small to begin with. The main issue, though, is that the code does not establish a minimum size for recreation areas. So working with Pros Consultant and through our inventory of extremely small private parks, we found that they have a low recreational value, and again, it's due to the amount, the capacity they have for amenities. So the proposed code will essentially eliminate parks that are a quarter acre or less by requiring an in-lieu fee be paid instead. Again, these are extreme cases, and they are rare. It equates to a residential development with 21 lots or less, or a rezoning with 12 lots or less. So currently, that town has roughly 10 of these very small private park areas, and we've only had one in recent years that would have even qualified, and it was a townhome, 18-unit townhome development in Rancho Vistoso off Morning Vista Drive. We also, though, propose to maintain the option for the in-lieu fee for bigger parks or bigger residential projects, but they still have to show that they are near a public park And we did add a further restriction that they can't satisfy their entire recreation area requirement with a fee. Only a portion of it can be. And the reason is so that way we make sure that these bigger projects have at least some recreation area space. So through our from the feedback we gathered, there was agreement that that very small private parks do have the limited space to provide usable and meaningful rec area. To further understand this, we did survey the HOA board members, and we did get responses from some of those who actually have smaller rec areas. And what they identified was the primary determinant of if their rec space was going to be used often was its location and the type of amenities that are there. So last time we were here, there was discussion about whether requiring a minimum fee is better than just requiring a minimum rec area. And although extremely small parks can have a variety of amenities, most do not, especially the ability to provide even basic amenities such as seating and shading. And so staff finds that requiring all residential projects to provide a minimum rec area size of 1/4 acre wouldn't be equitable, because this can impact residential projects that have from 3 lots to 21 lots. Whereas what we're proposing with the in-lieu fee, it does take into account the size of the project for how their in-lieu fee would be calculated. Additionally, we did get feedback from council to make sure that in-lieu fees are used on the public park facilities that are within proximity of the private rec area, which makes sense. That's the one they'll likely be using. We have added language that requires the in-lieu fees to be used on the private parks that are closest to the associated project. We do recommend there's still some flexibility maintained to allow us to use the in-lieu fee on improvements as needed. Then lastly, we wanted to look at amenities and making sure that there's meaningful amenities in these park areas. So the current code, there are no provisions in the code to ensure meaningful amenities are in private recreation areas. There is some examples given in the code that people can choose from, but honestly, the list is a little outdated and doesn't have as much flexibility as to think of things like pickleball that we didn't think about probably when we were initially making the code. So as proposed, we would require a minimum amenities or basic amenities in every rec area. And this includes shading, seating, pedestrian connectivity, trash receptacles, parking for both vehicles and bicycles. We also updated the list of amenities. And so it's timely that Anna is here, because one of the active amenities we added is a community garden. Also, dog parks are something that we got from the survey that people want, and there's not enough. So we've added to the list to try to include some of those more, I don't want to say modern, but newer amenities that just weren't included in the code before. So there was agreement that a variety of amenities for all ages and abilities is needed when we came out to you all last time. This was also confirmed by the survey. 94%, almost everyone who responded, agreed that seating, shading, and pedestrian connectivity are not only important, but they're also what's currently most used in a lot of parks. Now, there was concern from this board about duplicate amenities, developers putting in just the same amenities in a single park. Similarly, town council wanted to see flexibility to allow comparable amenities that aren't listed in code to get a better variety. There are also concerns from our Planning and Zoning Commission about specific amenities and how they are used. For instance, shading around playground equipment and the amount of natural turf in bigger parks. So the proposed code amendment includes flexibility by allowing town council the authority to approve comparable amenities not listed in code. And those are comparable in use, accessibility, and function. They can also replace amenities that are proposed to achieve a greater variety. And with regard to the play equipment, the current code requires all or even just a portion of only the play equipment to be shaded. So what we're proposing is actually to significantly expand that and require 100% of the play equipment and what is known as the fall zone to be shaded. So the example on the screen, the play equipment's kind of in the hashed black and white lines. The fall zone is all the brown area around it. So where currently they would only have to shade some of the black and white, we're proposing, no, you need to shade all of it. And that's actually already happening in many newer subdivisions. So this is an example where you can see that the fall zone and the play equipment are both screened. Now, with regard to turf, the concern was over the water use on natural turf. So the code currently limits natural turf to only 15% of the private rec area. So we're going to maintain that limitation. And also, natural turf in rec areas cannot be used for decorative purposes. So they have to be used for some type of activity purposes or gathering, if you will. Those will all be maintained. The only change we're proposing is to allow town council to approve a higher percentage, but only if a sports field or similar amenity is being proposed, since we are discussing larger rec areas. And so the next steps with this proposed code amendment, again, we're still in conversations with some stakeholders that represent home builders as well as multifamily developers. I am happy to hear your questions, but also get your additional feedback. And then the proposed code amendment will be presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission and then ultimately Town Council. So in summary, the proposed code changes do aim to meet the need that was identified in the Parks and Rec Needs Assessment and the objectives in the Town Council Strategic Leadership Plan. Our proposed changes are based on research best practices and the feedback that we received from all three boards as well as the survey. And it does focus on creating larger private rec areas through consolidation, increasing or establishing the rec area size, and by prioritizing higher value rec areas. It also aims to ensure there are more meaningful amenities provided in such areas to get the highest use out of them. So this concludes my presentation. Hopefully it was short enough. And try to get through it. There's a lot. And I would appreciate any questions or feedback you may have.
So that's Moore Loop Park up there?
Yes, that is. Yep.
So they put that in the open space, and that was shared between two different developers. And after last year's monsoons, I went down there to look to see how that swimming pool was doing, and it was full. So that it just sort of flowed through there. So somewhere along the line, the next time that comes up, it should be somehow figured out. But, I mean, this makes a lot of sense. My question is, how did the home builders react?
Sure. So the biggest change to them will be if they rezone a property to go from that 512 to 900. With regard to consolidating the private rec areas, many of them already are. The code currently requires that rec areas be a central focus area. So that's not too far out from what they're already doing. Same with the amenities. I think they appreciate they will appreciate the flexibility provided. And so although there are changes being proposed in the code, I think the balance is we're adding flexibility to almost every area. Because we recognize, especially with the land remaining and the parcels remaining are remaining for a reason, right? And so the need to be a little bit flexible is, I think, probably the most helpful thing for the home builders.
Go ahead. I have two questions. So the first question I jotted down, just in regards to your summary, has there been any research or data around how the cost of living might increase for Oro Valley residents if, say, HOA fees might increase because of these requirements?
That's a great question. We have not researched that with regard to the HOA fee increases.
I know there's been a lot of talk in the town over the last few months over affordable housing in the area, so that maybe not as many people have to come from a different part of town and they could live here if they worked here. So that's why it was on my mind as I was listening to this presentation. Would this increase the cost? Would HOA fees? Because the cost of maintaining shade structures and amenities, obviously, it's not a one-time fee. The HOA would have eventually have to start maintaining that. So I would imagine maybe costs would increase, or maybe it would maintain the same if they were had multiple parks that they're consolidating. I would just be interested to know. And then my second question was, on the list of amenities, you had pedestrian connectivity and parking listed. Would those two things count in the like acreage requirement? Could somebody essentially have a big parking lot, but not as big of a park?
Sure. So the parking would not count in the recreation.
Okay.
The pedestrian connectivity could only if it's like trails within the rec area.
Okay.
So Saguaro Viejos, La Mirada, that subdivision, their rec area, they have like a Ramada in the middle, and then they have a fitness path all around it. So they were able to include
that
type of, but not the sidewalks too.
Okay.
The rec area. And in terms of the HOA fees, one thing we did with the survey is we did ask what their highest maintenance costs are, and we gave the options of landscaping, irrigation, replacing equipment or shade structures, and then replacing lighting or signage. And landscaping and irrigation were the top two.
Sure. Sure.
And so I do know that some HOAs to reduce costs are removing their natural turf and instead putting in either artificial or something else, a different type of material on the ground. And I'm glad you brought that up. So one thing too with this code amendment is currently the rec areas, they're designed during the development review process. So it's a developer designing them and deciding what amenities go in them,
right,
and then constructing them. So what we actually saw through the survey as a need and what we realized is a need is because of that, sometimes they get installed and 5 years later, all the residents who live there are like, wait, this isn't what we want.
Right.
The costs are too high. So with the proposed code amendment, we did add language that will allow an HOA or a property management company to get changes to amenities or to like reduce the turf to be an administrative process. So they don't have to take the time. They would still need to submit something to the town just so we could review it for safety and make sure that they're not, you know, we don't want to create unusable rec areas because everything got removed. But making it a staff process rather than going through a public meeting process, which most HOAs just aren't, you know, maybe used to doing or the time.
I have Member Varys on the phone who would like to ask a question. Emily, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Thank you. Can
you
hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. So I guess my question is twofold. One, I was wondering if I loved that there was like shade structures mentioned for playgrounds because usability, like there's a playground with no shade is not usable for the majority of the year in Arizona. It doesn't matter if you put it in. But I wonder if there was any talk about like use of solar on top of those shade structures to make them, you know, if the park is going to have courts in the evening that have lights, you know, like would we be able to encourage that usage of that space? And then also like, you talked about expanding the shade for the playground, and this is so small, but is there any talk about, like, the aging of the playgrounds? I imagine if there's only one for an entire community, you know, playgrounds that are for older kids are really dangerous for younger kids if that's the only one in their playground. And then likewise, the playgrounds for younger kids are not as attractive for older kids to play and be active if it's the only thing in their neighborhood.
Sure. So with regard to the solar on top of the shade structures, we did not take that into effect in terms of putting that in code. Not that it couldn't be proposed, but again, we would look at the ongoing costs of that, I think, as well in terms of an HOA. I do want to mention, too, that for these private rec areas, they are subject to our lighting code. And the lighting does have to be fully shielded and turned off at 10 p.m. And the reason being is that most of them are surrounded. This is a unique example. But most of them are right in the next to homes. So therefore, we do want to maintain the requirement that the lights be turned off at a certain time. But I do hear you, and solar definitely could be proposed. We just didn't put it in the code. Same with the playground equipment. We have allowed the developers and even future our residents, when they come in for changes, to kind of let us know what their future residents or their current needs are with regard to the ages of the play structures. We do have them put that on the plan, so we know if they're the 2 to 5 or more, but we haven't codified a requirement to prescribe what they have to provide, just because we don't know the ages of the residents they're intending to have.
Thank you.
Quick question. I would assume this is not going to impact the ultimate ownership of these parcels. Is that correct? You're not going to get any ownership technical issues with an HOA or a developer.
So this wouldn't apply to any existing spaces. It'd only be new ones. And the developers, they are required to actually construct the space, and the code requires that recreation areas be in construction at a certain permit level. So at a certain point, they have to start constructing it. So the onus wouldn't be on an HOA to actually install it. Once it's installed and once they finish out all their other requirements for the subdivision or the project, they turn it over to an HOA. If it's multifamily, they'll turn it over to usually a property management company.
Secondly, who's going to monitor model this process once it gets started and it's up and running? Are you going to default to the HOA to do that, or is the city going to double check it?
So if approved, the proposed code amendments will go into effect 30 days after approval. And most of these requirements, actually all of the requirements, have to be shown on what we call a recreation area plan. That's part of a landscape plan, and they have to go through the development review process. So the recreation area plan, it's reviewed by multiple departments, including planning. We are the lead reviewer when it comes to the zoning code. That's our Bible, if you will. But engineering looks at it. Stormwater will obviously need to look at it to make sure the drainage works. Even our water utility looks at it as well. And then also those recreation area plans, they go to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Town Council. So there is still a public review aspect of those.
I had to look at it. Once it's up and running.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, what happens?
Yeah, so once they're installed and they're constructed and it's turned over to the HOA, we don't go around and enforce that everything's still there. We do want HOAs to let us know if there are changes made. And we're a complaint-driven town. So if a neighbor does call us and say, hey, there used to be a slide here, our HOA took out the slide, we're going to look at the approved plans and say, hey, and that's when the enforcement comes in.
Yeah, those play structures, I was just looking at the reserve study for the Rancho Vistoso. Play structures are good for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And when you replace them, it's about $100,000 out of the HOA budget.
Yeah.
Not an insignificant sum.
And that's where we wanted to build in, and that's what some of the survey responses were. We need it to be easier to update things. We need it to be, a quicker process to update things based on our residents' need. Because you're right, in 20 years, maybe there's, older kids or, there's a need for other types of, there might even be new screen, interactive playground equipment for all we know. So it's allowing that flexibility.
I have another question. Has there been any consideration in open spaces to create some sort of natural shade, such as tree shade consideration?
Yeah, so the shading can be a structure or it can be provided through trees. Another thing that I didn't bring up was we also wanted to take more focus on the access routes to the private rec areas, and especially the shading of those access routes to the private rec areas. So definitely it can be provided with trees or natural shading as well.
But there's no kind of like requirement to do that.
Outside of the access route, we do require that the access route shading be included. And typically that is going to be trees.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anybody else have any questions? Are we supposed to do anything at this point?
Sure.
Not right.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at 6:50. May I have a second?
Second.
We have a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed can stay as long as they want.